Think you know how to party? Well, science does. In fact, there are nerds out there that spend their whole lives researching the ins and outs of sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
But don't take this nerd's word for it. In the Party Science Podcast, we break down the research behind a good time and a great time.
I'm Dr. Joel Rindelob, a real-life scientific researcher.
And I'm comedian Courtney Dawson, a real-life party girl.
And together, we talk to world experts in psychedelics.
Look at topics like the physiology of squirting and show you how science parties harder than you thought possible.
Stay tuned every Wednesday for a new episode scientifically proven to rock your dome.
This is a Frank podcast.
Cheer! Today on Honest to Who, the podcast, baby, we've got Kaylee. Kaylee is a radio slash, I keep doing the slashes, but I'm just going to keep doing it. Radio, she's a radio personality on MyFM. She just finished up there as well. She's also a mum of five, about to be six, and started singing when she was very, very young, has so many stories. And in this party, we talk about her journey over to America. We also talk about a little bit about blended families and trauma from bad relationships. But it's an amazing journey of a story. I'm so glad that you're here with us enjoying it. I've said it before, I'll say it again. If you're watching this on YouTube, you better hit that subscribe thingy, all right? And also give us a review. Enjoy the podcast, and yeah, we'll catch you guys when we catch you. Hello, thank you for coming in here.
Thank you for calling me up and asking me and for finally having time.
I talked about this, I was thinking about this the other day. The last time that I interviewed you on a podcast was, I think you were in your closet sitting on the ground and you were heavily pregnant.
Well, I mean, I'm sitting in your office now and I'm heavily pregnant.
I know. So there's a theme there.
The difference there was COVID when you did that and now it's not.
And now it's just like, you know, just have to wait till Kaylee's having another baby and we can have another conversation.
I know, right? It's number six now.
Ooh.
All right, how many you got now? You need to catch up.
Well, I'm half towards you. I'm at three.
You catch up. Come on.
No, that's enough. I'm done. I've checked it in. I've done it. That's me. But no, thanks so much. I always love, and I was thinking about this on the drive here. I was thinking, you know, how can I open whatever it is, you know, to chat with you? But there's very few people, and I'm not just saying this because you're here, there's very few people in my life that aren't related to me or my partner or whatever, that when I talk to, I get this warmth around. And I thought maybe it's just me. But it's not, like, everybody else says that about you. Like, it's this warmth, like, you just, it's just great to be around you.
They're lying. Their heat is up too high.
No. There's this warmth about you. And I want to know where you get that from.
Years of being shat on. Let's be honest.
Years of just between the poos. Just
when you're in an industry where it's so cutthroat and you're used to hearing no or build-ups or you're used to being shafted and things like that, you go, actually, this is not a nice feeling. I would never want to have this feeling to happen to anyone else. And I think, you know, that saying of people always – remember how you made them feel, not what you did in life.
Yes.
And that's always been a huge thing that's really stuck with me. Man. And I would hate for anyone to go through life feeling like they didn't have someone that they could have went, you know what, who would have been honest with me? Who would have told it to me straight? Who would have been able to help me? Because I, you know, going through the industry through entertainment, through music and radio and all that kind of stuff, I never really had a person which I thought, okay, I could actually genuinely ask you and you could tell me to my face straight, what am I doing wrong or how can I make myself better or how can I get this? I want to do this and I want to be this. How do I get there faster? Like, what do I need to do to get the tools in my kit there to be there? And, you know, I think we are in a world where it's so big but yet so small in New Zealand that everyone thinks they're the gatekeepers and they don't want to share those little nuggets, those secrets. But at the end of the day, there's room enough for everyone to eat at the table.
Because I feel I think you're probably, you talk about the tools in the kitty. I think in terms of my kitty, like, you're probably one of the most valuable tools in my, because I can just ask you and you'll tell me straight away and there's no like, oh yeah, wait, I don't know if I, and that's why, like, anytime, especially when I first got into radio, when I first got into media stuff, when I didn't know anything, but I knew that, you know, hey, I could, and I felt that genuineness, that authenticity with you, that I could be like, hey, like, what is this and how can I do this? And you were really quite open to things, and a lot of people weren't. There weren't a lot of people that were open, but you were. So I just wanted to kick it off with that one.
Thanks. Well, you know, I'll tell you if your breath stinks.
Yeah.
And if you got food in your mouth.
Mm. I don't know.
Like, the last time you came and talked to me, I was like, hey, have you been eating pies before you come see me? Because it's all in your beard, mate.
And you never brought me any.
Yeah, that was the other thing. Where's mine?
But no, I do feel this kinship that I'm just, it's a very open, like those gatekeepers that you speak of, you know, they're out there, but it's kind of hard because there's so many people shitting on everybody and trying to pull on your head to climb the ladder. Like, when was the first time when you realized that happened to you? Like, somebody was, when's the first time that you felt that you got shit on?
Oh, I think in various ways. Like,
because you started really young.
Yeah. I think in various ways, there were certain things that people said that really stuck in my mind and really made me think, are you really in my corner? Like, do you really have my best interest at heart? Like, can I really trust you? And are you that genuine? And I remember being told, oh, you know, you shouldn't eat that because that's a whole pound of butter.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, are you serious? I'm 14. I've got netball tournaments coming up and everything like that, and I just want a pie. Mm. Like, come on now. A pie is not going to hurt me. Mm. I mean, if I kept on eating it like that, it probably would, but, you know I'd probably look like I've eaten heaps of pies now. But, you know, and then go into certain things where I would ask questions and I would get given roundabout answers.
Yeah.
And I think my dad was always really good at going, hey, I don't want a Wilbur Smith novel. Don't give me a J.K. Rowling, you know, history book or anything like that, or Harry Potter story. Just tell me the story straight. Give it to me straight. And I really appreciate that. I appreciate people who can be straight up and honest. So when you can tell someone's not giving it to you straight, when you can tell they're just bullshitting you, when you can tell that they're trying to be polite and nice about it, you know, I think that you can tell that kind of stuff. You can really gauge what people are trying to say and stuff. And you just develop that whole radar of bullshit artist, bullshitter, you know?
I noticed,
and you can tell.
Yeah,
I
noticed, like, and I've said this a few times on different things, but like South Auckland, the low socioeconomic places, you know, your Souths and your West Aucklands and down and put it, all those, you get that bullshit meter. You can go, as a kid, you're like, I don't trust that.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know if it's in the more efficient places.
Well, you can tell. In the industry that we're in, you can tell people who just say things just to be polite. You can tell people who just say things to, you know, just to, you know, quickly get out of the conversation and go, you know. And you can appreciate sometimes the honesty in that. But I think people try to define themselves too much on what they do in life versus how they treat people in life and how they get there, you know.
Coming up, so when you started, how old were you when you actually started music? When music was like, this, I'm going to give this a go.
14. Yeah. So 14, I think I finally built up the confidence and a music teacher. And even then, like, you have so much self-doubt in your head as a teenager, you're growing up and everything. And I don't think it ever goes away, even into adulthood. You just get a little bit better at masking it, or you just get a little bit better at going, no, I've had like done this three times now. I think I've got this. I think I know what I'm doing now. So I would just sing in kapahaka because I was too shy to sing by myself.
Yeah.
I was too whakama, and it was terrifying. It was terrifying. But at home, I was Mariah Carey. At home, I was a superstar, and I was always watching the music Grammy shows and MTVs and awards and things like that. Yeah, and I was like, I want to do that. I could do that. I could do that, man. That could be me. And I used to remember sitting there, you know, after I've adjusted the bunny aerials.
Tuned it in.
And, you know, twisted the middle, you know, coat hanger. And being like, I could do that. So it wasn't until we moved from Palmerston North to Auckland that I really realised that this could be an opportunity for me to really stretch my wings. And I think I was like 11 or 12. And the first step I did was go out and just ask for a job, you know, to build that confidence, you know, let me just go and see if I can get a job. You know, our family wasn't rich or anything like that, but, you know, I wanted a job because I wanted to play sports. I wanted to do things and I wanted to go places. And you couldn't do that in Auckland without having money.
Mm-hmm.
Money makes this place move. So I went down the road. It was a long Estate Highway 16 on Whenuapai and went to the veggie store and was like, do you have a job? Can I work here? I'll do anything. Sweep your floors, pick up your rubbish, whatever. I was 11 years old. They gave me a job.
Yeah.
And so that built my confidence into, well, actually, if I can do that just by myself, imagine what else I could do. And my grandmother always said to me, you know, what's the worst that can happen? Someone says no?
Mm-hmm.
That's only one person. There's 50 other thousand people. There's 5 million people in this country. At least a handful of them are going to say yes,
yeah,
and give you a shot. So what's the worst that happened? All you got to do is find that person. You just got to keep knocking on those doors. And it was that, my grandmother saying that, and my koro always telling me that, you know, life is all about stories, memories, making those memories, making those opportunities. You can't go through life and be safe all the time. You know, you've got to step outside your box and just really just try things, because otherwise, what other stories are you going to have to tell your mokos?
That's a huge thing, right? Yeah. I mean, you've got so many stories.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, I've...
Good and bad.
I know. I've listened to some of them, and I'm like, wow, I did not know that. And hopefully we get through some of those. But I think, you know, and come back to my first question around the warmth and stuff. Did that come from, like, your nan and your pop and giving you... I mean, giving you advice like that at such a young age and your parents as well?
Yeah. I mean, I'm super lucky. I'm so lucky that I grew up in such a really good whānau environment from both sides, my Pākehā and Māori side. So it was all about, you know, encouraging our creativeness, our dreaming. And, you know, mum and dad would always ask us, if you won $1 million, what would you do? What would you do with it? I ask my kids that now, and my oldest turned around and she goes, mum, we can't even buy a house for $1 million. And I was like, you're right.
She's clicked on because you can't even get a deposit. It's a deposit. It might be a deposit for a house.
Not even that. Can you afford the 7 or 8%?
No. Oh, man.
But, you know, like to be able to ask your kids that and then listen to them and see what they dream about, you know, how often do you actually get to ask your kids what they actually dream about? What is the biggest thing? What is the most outrageous thing? So, you know, now my 9-year-old, he trips me out all the time. He asks me, mum, you could add anything to our house right now, what would it be?
Ooh.
And I'm like, oh, another bedroom, another toilet, a shower with a lock on the door. You know, another pantry, another fridge, man. My secret stash fridge. Hide my chocolates.
Need a bat cave.
And I'm like, what would you do, son? And he goes like, man, mum, you know what I'd do? I'd make our house taller. I'd put a slide in there so I could just slide down into the kitchen and everything.
So that's a potential builder right there.
You know, and I'm just thinking, man, that's an imagination. Oh. You know, and he asked me, you know, if any superpowers, what would you have?
Oh.
You know, those kind of things. And I'm like, man, this is the dreaming that my parents encouraged. And I always hope that that can encourage them to really keep talking to me, keep still thinking that I'm cool. But, you know, have that warmth and that security and that safety around that you can actually ask those questions, that you can, you know, be yourself and not be judged.
Mm.
You know, home's supposed to be a safe place. Yeah. And right now a lot of our kids don't have that. And so if you can be that person that's out there that allow them to be able to confide in you, then, you know, you could be that safe person for them to dream and to go, hey, look, I'm really ambitious and I really want to do this. Do you think I'm good enough? Or do you think I have the tools? What do I need to do to get to that place? And if you could be that person that can answer that for them, then, you know, you could be that person that helps set them up to be prime minister take a Waititi in the future.
That's the thing, right? It's the role modeling and seeing what you can kind of achieve, right? Do you ever, you know, do your kids see what you've achieved much?
I hope so.
Yeah. Do you ever, you know, like stop? Because life is so busy and it's always going and it's always one thing after the other. And sometimes just sitting, and I've had to try and figure it out too for myself, is how can we just push pause and just reflect, you know? And I think our kids are the ones that are actually the ones that reflect and see more than we do.
Did you ever ask your parents what you were like when you were a baby?
Yeah.
Well, you know, what was I like when, did you throw me a first birthday party or did you,
yeah.
you know, that's the reflection. Mm-hmm. That's a reflection. So when my kids come and ask me, you know, Mum, what was my first word? And I was like, shut up. That was your first word. No. Dead. I was like, carried you for 9 months.
Oh, man.
But like, those are the reflections that you go, oh, those are actually what's important. Mm. It's not, oh, what did it feel like to be on that stage with Pink or Missy Elliott or Cypress Hill? And what were you feeling when you were on stage and rocking the stage and singing your songs? Or how did it make you feel? Like, my kids don't ask me that stuff.
Yeah.
They ask me, what was it like when you were at school? What was it like when you were a kid? What was the most dumbest thing that you did when you were at school? Did you have this when you were at school? Did you have this when you were a kid? They reflect on the things that, you know, what we think aren't important anymore.
Mm.
You know, and that just means that our perspective and our priorities are a little bit out of whack.
Yeah.
So, you know, bring it on back home. Bring it back on to what matters. You know, center yourself, humble yourself, and you know, make sure that your world is tow, because if you don't have balance in those areas, you're not going to have balance anywhere else.
Because balance is, I mean, a huge thing, especially when you've got so much going on. Like you know, when you're on the radio and now you've got all these stuff going on, how do you figure that out? Because having five and one on the way, you know, and also, you know, being at home and mahi and all those things, what did you do? Like, how did you find that?
You know, I always used to think that I had that worked out. I always used to think, yeah, man, my life is balanced as toe as, it's cool. But adding another child into the mix always just throws me out of whack. And I'm just like, oh, okay, gotta rejig that one, gotta recenter that one. It's like an alignment on your tires. You gotta keep on getting them done, you know? So I think the more that you put into your kete, the more you put on your plate, obviously you've gotta readjust.
Mm.
And there will come a time and a place and a part in your life where you turn around and go, actually, this is too full and too heavy for me to carry.
Yeah.
And I actually need to just, you know, pull it back a bit. And I think I came to that place in my time, my life, my world at the moment with Mai, where I was like, actually, you know, is this still serving a purpose for me?
Mm.
Am I still enjoying it? Am I still getting the same challenges and the love out of it and everything? And although I loved what I was doing and although I could go in there and do it with my eyes closed, I had to be honest with myself.
Yeah.
You know, I'm about to have another baby. The last pregnancy didn't go so well. Well, I mean, she's alive.
And she's beautiful.
Yeah, she's still, you know, owns the house pretty much, runs the house. Yeah. But it was really, you know, tumultuous for our family, for me, especially for my own mental health and everything. So I had to really think about what's going to work, what's in the best interest for my family, for me, my mental and my physical capacity, and, you know, can I actually do this right now? Is it viable for us? Luckily enough, I have an amazing partner who's so supportive, and he's just like, look, just do it. Just do it already. He's like, stop talking and just do it. And it was hard. It was really hard for me. It took me 2 years to really go, okay, I'm going to step away.
Yeah.
I'm going to hang up the headphones at my FM, because there's so much more that I still wanted to do. But then at the same time, I was like, actually, is it just me because I want to do it for myself, or do I want to do it before my whānau, my you know, whenua, my the people there? And so making that part and making that choice, I realized, oh, I'm actually okay with this now.
Yeah.
I was at peace with it, and I was like, okay, cool. And then having the send-off that I had just made it even better. It was good. It was so good. My cup was overfilling. It was quite actually overwhelming. And then to step into part-time mahi lecturing over at Awanui Arangi, like, my cup was just still overflowing, and I just knew that I had made the right decision. I was very at peace with it. And then it's been like maybe 6-7 weeks now, and I was like, wow, this is actually what it means to slow down and just be present.
What was the first, I mean, you know, you went into that. What was the first kind of like, oh, I don't want to say red flag, but what was the first sign for you personally in your mind was like, I think, and I know like you talked on your previous pregnancy as well, but is there anything that you were just like, I need to slow down because of this and because of that, apart from what you just said, you know, was it like, hey, you know, things are... And just
for me. I wasn't sick or anything. Like, yeah. No, it wasn't. It wasn't for health reasons or anything like that. It wasn't for any mental health reasons or anything like that. I mean, like, it was just me, and I actually just sat back.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to talk about. The sit back, yeah, you know.
I sat back and I realized I'm wanting to transition. I'm wanting to grow as a person. How do I do that? I can't continue to grow with somewhere where I've been for 13 years.
That's a hard thing to do, though, is realize.
Self-reflection is a bitch.
It's hard, man. And sometimes, like...
It hurts.
Sometimes you
it
lie.
It hurts your white oil.
And there's a lot of lies that you tell yourself, right?
Yeah.
No, I'm sure I'm growing here. Yeah, no, I am. But in reality, maybe I'm not growing here. I'm just here so I could pay these bills and get on. And that's when it gets a little bit, you know, like, oh, I don't
Are
know if this
is the best
for me.
Are you being honest with yourself? Are you being true to your values, your morals? And by all means, some people can sit there and they can keep doing the same thing day in, day out, day out, and be comfortable and be happy doing that. And that's okay. I'm just not built like that. That's just not how I'm wired. I'm always trying to look for a challenge, whether it's a big challenge or small challenge. Like, I'm always trying to look for a challenge. I'm always trying to look for a way to better myself, to educate myself. If you're not learning, then what are you doing? You're not living. If you're not challenging yourself and pushing yourself out of that comfort zone, then what are you doing with your life? What are you doing to make your life better? Or what are you doing to impact the world in which we live in, your life that you live in, to have some value, some substance? And so I actually had to look at that. But it was a bit of a self-realization, and then it was a big ego pop as well. Because I had just had this whole Groundhog Day kind of deja vu thing going on for a couple of days, and I was just like, I felt that kind of deflation, you know, and I was just like, oh, here I go again, same day, in, out, record this, do that, do this, you know, say this, go upstairs, do that, come back, do this show. And I went to go and get my lunch, and I sat down. And, you know, I sat on the couch at my, and I looked up, and we had just had a really good meeting and stuff like that. Same stuff given up. Make sure you're not changing the music. Make sure you're clicking off your liners. Make sure that this event's coming up, this event's coming up, and everything. We need content for this. Cool. So, you know, I'm sitting down, I'm thinking about all that stuff. And I just sat there, and I was thinking about all these things that I need to do, and it just occurred to me, when I was looking through into the producer booth, that every single person in there was at least 12 years junior.
Oh, man.
And three of them were born when Broken Wings came out.
Oh, wow.
And I was sitting there going, damn.
Damn.
I'm old. And I was like, wait. So I really had to put things in perspective. And I was like, this is a youth station. And I'm over here trying to better myself. I want to push myself and challenge myself. What do I have to do? What does that feeling feel like? And I remember that feeling of going in and getting my first record contract and going in and doing my first audition for a school show, or going in to actually trial for a big, massive team like, you know, Auckland for netball and things. And I remember the feeling of, you know, adrenaline, excitement, but fear at the same time. And that want, that spark of like, I really want this to work. I'm really going to work my ass off. I can do this. And just that believing in yourself to do it. And I was like, I am so comfortable. I am so stagnant. And then I thought, I want to push myself out of this. And I'm waiting for other people to be fired or cark it or be culturally cancelled just to get into their seat.
Mm.
Like, this industry is not that big.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, damn, if I'm waiting for them, are they looking at me like that? Are they? I was like, am I holding up someone's spot? And I was like, man, I don't want to be that gatekeeper. Yeah. And that changed my perspective. Not only was I out of that demographic and I needed to actually challenge myself, but I was thinking, I'm holding up. I'm supposed to be the kaitiaki of this. Mm. I'm supposed to make it better for the next generation to come through. That next generation is looking at me right there. They're there gassing each other up and playing around and things like that, and they're having a good old laugh. And I'm thinking, I've got to pay bills and all that kind of stuff. I'm not in that space anymore.
Well, there's the conflict between having something to pay bills and then being very selfless, if you think about it like yeah. that.
No you responsibilities.
Know, yeah, but then there's like the selflessness of like, hey, like I need to bring the next one through. Like I need,
yeah.
you know, because I've been holding this table
for to come through. Yeah. And I've been training them to like, I'm all about, you know, sharing and you know, that mātauranga, that manaakitanga, like always making sure that we're empowering and educating each other. And if there's people who are wanting to learn, man, I'll show you. I'll show you exactly how it's done. I don't mind. I don't mind giving you those gold nuggets because you could make it better.
Yeah.
You could make it even more better. You could take it to the next level. Yeah. You know, you could be me and then some, you know? So if I'll share with you the knowledge that I have, the do's and don'ts. Yeah. You know, because, you know, there's always room for growth. But I was sitting there going, damn, I need to move aside.
Yeah.
I need to move aside and I need to let somebody else come through. I need, and for the love of the brand that for the whānau there, like that the innovation and the way that the creativity just rolls around, you're like, I don't have the energy to do that anymore. Mm. My creativity, my focus is elsewhere. So I'm thinking, you know what? I'm not doing it justice. Yeah. I'm not doing myself a service by staying in a place where this is no longer my place to grow. Yeah. I've grown, have hit the ceiling, and I need to grow somewhere else.
There's a whakatauki that's, and I don't want to do it in te reo, but like it's almost like if you're not hungry for the kai, you get off the tepu, right?
Yep.
And not that you weren't hungry for the work or hungry for the mahi that you're doing, but the growth of it. And,
yep.
And the next question, the one I wanted to ask was, apart from what you're doing now with your new mahi, when's the last time that you felt that you're a beginner at something? You know what I mean? Like when you first came on radio, there was, you know, you just learnt as you went and those things. But is this next venture kind of like I get to be a beginner again?
Oh, there's a few things. Like, because obviously I'm doing my own podcast, so I'm learning about that. Because you and I both know that when you're in radio, breaks are like, you know, no longer than a minute, 3 minutes here. And when you interview people, it's only this little pocket and you got to hit a song, you got to hit slots and stuff like that and timestamps. So doing a podcast, like being able to banter and really
unleashed.
Hear how people's motives and values and the things that make them tick and be vulnerable with people, like that's, I get a lot out of that. And so I'm learning a lot in that aspect. Technology-wise, forever learning.
It's never a thing. It always keeps going and going.
It just keeps evolving. And, you know, you start to see the evolution of how everything's rolling now. Mm. So you either, you know, get left behind or you get on that waka and you teach yourself. You learn. You grow. I'm all about growing. Mm. So I'm on that waka and I'm learning on the way. So that's been pretty interesting for me. And then the teaching part.
Yeah.
Because now I'm responsible for a whole bunch of people to finish their diplomas and their degrees and things and to teach them and to help them and to give them tools to put in their kete so that they can have a career in a job, which I know very well.
Mm.
You know, how do I translate that to them? How do I teach them that stuff? How do I convey and help it and help them to retain that information without waffling on or gassing them up and things like that? How do I be real with them without hurting their feelings?
Mm. Yeah, you're right.
You know, because not everyone's going to be a radio announcer. Not everyone is going to be a star. And it's, you know, a lot of people go into radio thinking that. And if you're there for that, you're there for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, there's a lot of learning things. I learn every day from my kids.
Mm.
I learn every day from them. Honestly, they have been the best teachers in my life. like I've learned that obviously not everyone thinks the same, not everyone behaves the same, not everyone treats each other the same. So, you know, I think that's a big difference, that we all speak different languages and how we communicate and guide through life and how the world is evolving in their world.
Mm. It must be, it's a nice feeling, I think, where you're just like, I don't know this, but when you have a mindset of, I'm just going to get better at it. I don't need to know it. I need to get better at knowing it.
After my first two kids, I was like, no, this is the expectation and we've got to do this, 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 and I've always got to be doing this and I've got to be the best mum. I've got to be the best announcer. I've got to be the best woman, best this, best that, and I've just got to be absolutely perfect because I had that expectation on myself. I've always had that expectation in anything that I do. As you add another kid and then another kid, you realize that you can't have those expectations because – I mean, you can have an expectation to do things right, be thorough, attention to detail and little things and be the best that you can. But you can't have an expectation and not plan to fail.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have all these things out there and then go, oh my gosh, and be so angry and stressed because it didn't go to plan. That's not how life works. And so I learn every single day that I can't control the outcome of everything, no matter how much effort or how much, you know, perfection I might think that I'm putting in or how much, you know, mana or value or whatever that I'm putting into anything, sometimes it's just not going to work out the way that you want it to.
How hard was that to make that switch from just, you know, like I need to be the best, blah, blah, to like, hey, you let the chips lie where they may?
It took a while. It took a while. I think it was over a good year or two.
Mm-hmm.
And my partner, actually, he was the one who actually taught me. He was like, why are you stressing about it? He's like, so it didn't go to plan. There's another option.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what do you mean? There's not another option. I've planned for this. I've had this expectation. We do this and we go follow these steps and it's going to do this. That's how I've always done it. That's how I roll.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to learn from him how to really adjust and adapt to my surroundings, really learn that not everyone thinks like me and that, you know, I actually have to be flexible. I actually have to, you know, adjust myself and my way of thinking in order to make life a lot easier. Like, it doesn't have to be that hard. And I was like, oh, okay. And then it got easier. Life got easier. Way that I navigated and thought of what I needed to do got easier. The routes that I took got easier. So
I think when you figure out that not everybody is wired the same and not everybody has the same heart. You know what I mean?
You don't get so offended when things don't happen. You don't take it so hard and personally because you're like, actually, it didn't work out because it just wasn't my time.
Yeah.
And when you take more self-responsibility and reflection on that, you go, oh, okay. Well, I still want to do this, so maybe I'll just try somewhere else.
How old is your oldest baby?
She's 16.
16.
Yeah.
Do you look at her and you think, man, like, you have so much of me in there? Like I look at you and I think, I can't get angry at you for doing that because I did the same and I still probably do the same. I do that with my older one all the time.
So my oldest is me. She's my mini-me. We're born on the same day.
You guys look uncannily the same as well.
I don't see it.
I see it. I've only seen it for photos. I'm like, man, because, you know, I grew up seeing you at 16 on TV.
Yeah.
You know, so I, you know, I saw that.
She's a much better teenager than I was. Okay. So I'm really grateful. She's a much better teenager than I was. But she's also a lot more reserved and a lot more shy. She's a lot more intellectual and loves reading and loves books and stuff like that, you know. So there's some great things that she's picked up from me, but then there's some beautiful things that she has of her own. So even though she's my mini me, she's her own person, and I love that. And I love the way that she thinks and that she comes out with things. And then sometimes I'm just saying, sis, come on, baby girl,
I've done this, got the t-shirt, yeah. You know.
Trust me, I've been here.
You can't pull the wool over my eyes. You think I'm silly? Oh. You know. But I also have to remind myself, and I have to do this to my partner too, I have to remind him that, you know, we're really fortunate because there could be worse things that she could be out there doing, you know, as much as we worry. And I'm really lucky that I have really beautiful kids. Like my kids, they're really awesome. They're funny, they're hilarious, they piss me off, and, you know, they do everything that they're meant to do because they're kids, you know. They test the waters. But, you know, that self-realization of they're not going to be rocket scientists, they're not going to be doctors, they're not all going to be, you know, these high-paying role jobs that we all dream that, you know, you wish your kids could have. That not every one of them are going to be like that. And you know what? Whose dream is that?
That's the other thing too that I wanted to bring up, because, you know, like, you know, I was a basketball guy for a long time and everyone was like, oh, are your kids playing? I just let them choose what they wanted to do. I think that's the, I don't know if they, like, they, if they want to do that by osmosis, they've seen me do stuff. Has that kind of played on your mind? Like, I, you know, I'm in this industry, if, you know, like I'm in the media industry. Do you want to be in there? But there's no stress or anything with starting so young.
I'd rather them not be singers or anything because, you know, you can't make money out of that here in New Zealand.
I mean, you've itched a good, you know.
A career in it, yeah.
Well,
you know, I tell my kids, like, the realization of what it looks like here in New Zealand in comparison to what they see online and what it looks like overseas. You know, they're like, I want to be a YouTuber. I'm like, yeah, but did you know that those people over there make millions of dollars because their audience is, you know, billions of people?
Yeah.
You know, so.
That's the honest Kaylee coming out of here.
Yeah.
Killing these kids' dreams. I want to be a YouTuber.
I'm a realist.
Yeah.
You know, I'm honest with them. I'm like, okay, well, if you want to be that, what are you going to do to make sure that, you know, you're successful in it? What do you think you need to have?
Mm.
What kind of training do you think you need to have? What kind of charisma and skills do you think you need to have? You know, really get them thinking about what they need to achieve in order to do that. You know, I look at my kids now and I think, you know, should I have made them play every single instrument under the sun just so they can be musicians and only make, you know, $50 a gig in a bar somewhere? You know, should I put that through them? And I'm like, actually, no, because that's not their dream. That's not what they want to do. So,
what was your dream when you were younger?
I wanted to be a hairdresser at one point.
Okay.
Yeah. So I cut off all the hair on my Barbie, makeup artist, all that kind of stuff. And I think I wanted to. Did I want to own a KFC? Oh, no, that was my baby sister. She wanted to own a KFC when she was little.
Owning a franchise is pretty lucrative.
When you think about it, I'm like, hey, my baby sister was smart.
Yeah. And I'm over here cutting Barbie's hair off.
Yeah.
Sheesh.
Yeah. But
can you remember?
I wanted to be a singer.
Yeah?
I wanted to be a singer.
From when's the first time when you can, you know, go back and think, man.
My mum would say the minute that I was potty trained because I'd just sit there singing all the songs under the world.
How cool.
But I think from around about that 10, 11-year-old, I think that's when I was like, I actually want to be that person.
Oh.
I want to be, you know, TLC, I want to be SWV, I want to be Mariah, I want to be Whitney, I want to be Celine Dion, I want to be Aretha Franklin, I want to be Anita Baker, I want to be Tina Marie. Like, I want to be those kind of singers. And then when I saw Te Re Moana Rapley and Moana and the Moor Hunters and stuff, and I saw her sing, and I was like, man, they sing in Māori? They sing on TV? And, like, you see my mum's Māori, she's brown hair, she's got curly hair, black hair, we look nothing alike. But I always thought I looked like that, to be honest.
Perspective is everything, all right?
I always thought I looked like that. You know, but if the actual reflection was I was very, very white with blonde hair, and I was quite the opposite. Oh. But I was like, that's me. Like, I could do that. I want to be like them.
Yeah.
That could be me. I could sing Māori. I could do that because I do kapa haka. I could, you know, and those little things. Doing kapa haka built a lot of confidence in being able to hear dynamics of voices and sing the melody and that. And performing
But it wasn't until I got to high school that performing solo on a stage, I was like, holy crap, like, this is all me. Like, I have to carry this. Like, I'm this person. I have to do it all myself. And then realizing halfway through, well, this is like singing in my lounge.
I think, well, you bring up Kapahaka. A lot of people don't know I was a Kapahaka kid. Like, I was Kapahaka hearty.
Yeah, you were.
And then an intermediate, you know, then I was the kaya of the group. And then I figured out, like, I can, you know, being in front of everything.
Kaitake Tane as well?
Man, I was up there. I had the biggest waha. But, you know, like, being, you know, ma, as I was.
Yeah.
I was able to just, like, go stuff it. Like, this is for me, this is for my nan, this is for my mum. I'm going to go hard out. And then standing in front of a crowd, then you realise that's not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're all good.
But then you have that realisation. You're like, well, hold on. If I had all that nervousness and anxiety just to get up on the stage to do that, and it wasn't as bad as that, then the next time I do it, it's going to be even better. The next time I try something that I used to feel. So now when I go to do things, and even as I got older, all the way through, if I had that anxiety or if I had that fear or that nervousness, those butterflies, I go, I know this feeling. I love this feeling.
Yeah.
And I would use that feeling and turn it into fuel to go, oh, this is what happened. And then I went out. Last time I felt this feeling, I was about to get on netball court and we smashed it and we won the tournament. Last time I had this feeling, I got on stage and I sung amazing and I had a really good show. I hit every single step, every single beat, and I didn't even forget any words.
When's the last time you can remember having that feeling, that butterfly feeling?
Oof.
Because it does feel, I know exactly what you're talking about. It feels like I shouldn't, you have this doubt and then you have this, this belief, and they're having this massive scrap in your stomach and you're just like, nah, you can't do it. Yes, I can. And you know, it's getting to, it's almost overwhelming, but then you get it done and it's like,
whew. Just bottled up and you go, okay, just go for it.
Yeah. Can you remember?
I haven't had the huge, big feeling for a while, but I've had little remnants of it when I go off to do, like when I'm hosting big, massive matches and gigs and stuff like that. So when I went to do the West Tigers and the Warriors match, you know, different crowd, different audience. And I'm just like, oh, I'd so love to be in the crowd with a beer right now, you know, but I'm here. And like, I have to give like terrible news and then I have to give exciting news and you have to hear the boos and the whahs, you know. So yeah, like those kind of moments and like going onto a stage before when you're hosting, like you're going to be judged. You know that.
Mm.
But at the same time, you're like, man, I've got the mic. We're here to have a good time. Mm. That's all I'm here for.
What's the highest?
I want to enjoy it.
What's the absolute highest amount of butterflies and things? Like, what's the biggest event that you can remember that you're just like, wow?
Oh, that's such a good question.
Because you had like Pink. What have you done?
There's
so many.
In music?
Yeah.
In music? You know what? It was getting back into the studio and recording for Dancing with the Stars.
Okay.
That was probably the biggest feeling of, I remember what this feeling feels like of getting into a studio and being recording again. And because I hadn't felt that side of my music creativity in a long time.
Haven't switched that on for a bit.
Yeah. I hadn't switched it on for a while. And so I was like, wow. Back in the studio, these studios are much flasher than I remember they used to look like.
There's no egg cartons on the wall.
Where's the egg cartons on the wall? Where's the sock that you got on the microphone?
what about when it released? Like, that would have been quite like, you know.
When I played it for my mum and dad, that there was another feeling there, playing that song. But I think also because it had such a significance, like recording the song that I sung, wherever you are, wherever you go, I'll be there right there waiting for you.
I think YouTube's going to ban us.
But recording that song had such a huge, significant feeling
Yeah.
And like a meaning to me. And I was like, man, can I still convey that when I record? Because I know, can I still sing it that way? Can I still sing it with that meaning and that passion? And can I still do that? Because I was so used to just singing parodies and jingles and all that kind of stuff that, and then just, you know, jamming with the band, like you kind of think, no, this is actually recording now. It's a lot more intimate than just rocking up on a stage and singing on a stage. When you're singing something that is really meaningful, you've got to put that down the microphone.
And you can hear that.
Yeah.
You know, people can hear if it is meaningful, if it's just
record. Or just another karaoke jam.
Just, oh yeah, this is, someone's written this for me. You know?
So when I got into the studio, and there was probably like maybe six people in the room, in the studio, five or six people. And I had that feeling.
How cool.
I had that feeling. And he was like, oh, look, before we just jump into the booth and everything, before we put you behind the mic and everything, he's like, let's go over the arrangement. Are you happy with the arrangement? And I was like, oh, yeah. I remember how this goes now.
Yeah. It's like riding a bike.
Yeah. And I was like, hold up. And I was like, actually, you know, can we shorten this and do that? And I just want to take it from this verse to that verse because we only have this much to dance to, blah, blah, blah. And we sat there and he's like, okay. And I was like, can you just play it through? And I was like, I have a few ideas on how I want to take it. And he was like, yeah, let's do it. And
it'd be pretty cool to get back on.
It was. It was, you know, so
it's almost
cool.
Like that home cooking. You know, it's like, oh, I haven't tasted a boil up for a while, but the way that Nan makes it, haven't had that fry bed for a bit.
Your mouth is just salivating the whole time.
And then you're just thinking, oh, this is exactly how it used to be. This tastes like how it used to be. Or was it kind of like that?
It was. It was that those feelings. And then just switching off the noise around and remembering and like feeling that feeling, being okay with feeling that feeling and going, you know what? I got this. I've done this before. I can do this.
Mm.
And then I just started singing the song. And
riding a bike.
He was just like, I love it. Like this exactly what he goes, I love how you just changed every little inflection and you did this and you held that note and you did that. And I was like,
still got it.
I was like,
Cheer, still got it.
And like the whole camera crew and like then my dance partner and everyone behind me was just like,
yeah, that's.
And I was like, okay, cool. I walked in and I like walked into the back, like, yes,
yeah, okay, got that.
Still got it.
Case still like, got that.
All right, we can do this. And then that whole like, yeah, okay, done. I got this. Yeah. I can do this now. Like, it takes a while for the cogs to warm up, I think. But I'm just like, yeah. The other time of feeling that is trying to get back on a netball court after snapping your Achilles and putting on so much weight and having a baby and things like that. So doing television, doing Dancing with the Stars, that was huge. Every night we went out there, I had that feeling. But remembering those feelings of, I know this.
Yeah.
I've done this.
Yeah, because that's the thing, right? It's like, oh, I've broken the seal. Yeah. I've done that before. That's fine. I had the same thing when I did the stand-up comedy, right? Because I was like,
oh, yeah,
I'm funny. All goods. I get up there.
My mum said I'm funny.
Yeah, my uncle reckons I'm the funniest in the family. And then I get up there and then, the first one, kill it. And I'm like, cool, I can do this. Then the second time you get booed off the stage. But it comes with the territory, right? You just got like, nobody's laughing. Nobody's laughing at your jokes. And you're just like, see you later. But, you know, it comes with the territory. But you just learn to adapt and you learn to go, oh, no, I've been to that dance before. I've been to I've been to that rodeo. I know how to ride the bull. And you just have to keep going.
I think the difference in that fear and that anxiety is, have you prepared yourself enough for it? You know, and I tell this to my kids as well, like, and I tell this to everyone, even the tohira that we have. I'm like, if you're feeling anxious and nervous, there might be two reasons. One, because you've done so much and you put so much effort into it, you really want it to succeed. Or two,
you haven't planned for shit. You've been coasting the whole entire time and you're an eat us.
That's straight up.
And now you're fearful and you've got anxiety because you have no idea what the hell you're doing because you haven't prepped and you haven't planned.
Those doubt monsters are coming for you.
You haven't crammed for that exam. You haven't done your homework. You haven't
controlled the controllable. Yep. And that's the whole thing. If you can control
Don't
how much
Bob
work
the
you put
build ups.
In, fucking how many Bob the Build Ups I've been on my show. Oh, fucking hell. There's so many. And you must have come along, especially in the music industry, especially in the music industry in America. Were there heaps of those over there, those eat-ass ones?
Yeah, yeah.
Because how old were you when you went over?
Get me to sign over my whole entire life,
and
pretty much.
How old were you when you went to America?
I was going backwards and forwards for a little bit, but when I officially moved over, it was 2006.
Okay.
How old was I back then? I don't even know how old
it
was.
Let the people guess. Let the people guess. You don't need to say it. But you know, because that's a whole different world compared to what we have over here.
Unfortunately, I think I went over with the best intentions. Obviously, I wanted to create more music. I wanted to be around amazing people who were like minded, and I loved that my last few trips over there, when I did go over to make music, it is electric. Like the vibe and the feeling that you get is so different from when you make music here. I don't know why. But like we'll get in a studio and we'll bust out a song in like less than a couple of hours. Like, and that's recording and mixing it down and everything, writing it. And that creative vibe just keeps firing. You're like, let's get on to the next song. Let's get on to the next song. And within like 5-6 hours, you've got like 7 tracks done that could potentially be an album, and you're like, let's get this feature on it. And the electricness when you're in a studio over there with that many creative people is amazing. And it's such I don't do drugs, but it's like a drug, I would suspect. Like, because you just want to feed off it. Yeah, you just want to keep going. And so I think I got to that point of like, I want to be there. I want to make music and have that feeling all the time. I don't want to, like, it shouldn't
be so. Is that because the ceiling's higher?
Hard. I don't know. Quite possibly.
Yeah, you just have,
well, what they're exposed to is totally different to what we're exposed to. Yeah. So it's amazing when you get to collaborate with different people because they are exposing themselves to different things all the time.
Mm.
And they're just willing to just throw it all into a pot, mix it together.
They're
and see
exposing
what the hell
themselves
we'd
a lot
think.
Too.
Well, yeah, that too. But then I also ran into people who were really disingenuous and real snake. They were real shady. And I did. I got to a point where I was okay with not pursuing any more music because I just didn't see a clear pathway. And I wasn't with the most is savory the word? I don't know. I think I wasn't with the most savoriest people.
Okay.
You know, and I wasn't surrounded by the most
people with the best intentions.
Yeah. Or I wasn't around people who were in the music industry and not necessarily doing it right, but they just, yeah.
I mean, like, you know, from what I've heard.
I wasn't around the people who were going to get me places.
Yeah.
Into the right doors.
It's the mediocrity of the situation, right? Everyone was just okay with just being there and not moving forward.
And I didn't realize, they were trying to move forward. They were straight hustlers. These people were straight hustlers and everything. And they were on the grind, but they were trying to pull people up with them and things like that. But at the same time, I wasn't with the right people for my music and for where I wanted to go, you know?
Yeah.
So I wasn't with the most savoriest people, but they were still straight hustlers.
Okay.
They were still on the grind and they were pulling out music that was great, but I wasn't supposed to be in that world or that box. I'm supposed to be with people who can make pop R&B music. I'm supposed to be with people who can push me and show me the door that way, you know? Not
get you in front of people that can.
Yeah. And so, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
that industry and that side of the industry is pretty real. And everything that you hear on the Hollywood stories and people who necessarily sell their souls, you know, to the devil and things like that, like that stuff is like, a lot of people do that.
I mean, it's true. It's true. People will sell themselves, sell their grandma down the road, you know, just to get to where they want. And was I propositioned to, hey, I'll give you a beat if you give me that, if you do this? And I quickly realized, I was like, actually, no. So who do you think you are? First of all, you know who I am.
Yeah.
And second of all,
I'm okay with Kaylee from fucking JJ's and Henderson, bitch.
I'm okay with not selling my soul to get that. And I'm okay, I think, because I was like, I need to sleep at night. I need to be okay with myself. So I'm not willing to sell my soul. I'm not willing to go and, you know, for the better part, and we're allowed to say it.
Fuck, you can say whatever you want. This ain't radio shit.
I'm not willing to go suck a dick for beats.
I'm not giving that ass up for that beat.
Exactly. I'm not willing to sell myself off to go and do that kind of stuff. And I was like, you know what? I need to sleep at night. I need to be okay with who I am and what I want to do and who I am, what I want to be. And it's no longer that. So then it took away from wanting to be that singer that I'd always dreamed about as being a kid to, I'm okay. I'm okay with not being that now. That doesn't define who I am. And I had to go back to, oh, what do I like? Who am I? So I went and played sports while I was there. For the rest of the time that I was there, that I was living there, I went and played netball for Los Angeles.
They have netball teams over there?
Oh, yeah. All the expats throw them together. Shout out to LA Waves.
LA Waves, throw them dubs up.
Let's go. Carson. Yeah. So, you know, and I met the most amazing people, and I realized that, yeah, there's so much more to me than just, you know, glitter and pop music and being that person. And then I remembered, oh, yeah, I did radio. I can do radio too. You know, oh, yeah, I can do this too. I could do that.
All those experiences that you just talked about, did that kind of, I don't want to say killed the buzz for you, but just made you go, ah, fuck this music shit if that means I have to be this?
Yeah.
Because that was it, right? We had the success of being, you know, this young 16, 17, 18-year-old that was, you know, took over, you know, Broken Wings and all that stuff, all, you know, One Plus One and all that stuff.
Can you feel me?
Can you, oh, can you feel me, Kaylee? Sorry, us. And then you had all that going on, and then you went to America, saw what the actual underbelly of to go to the next level is, and just gone, nah, fuck it. Fuck that. I'm just going to, listen, I've had my time here. What's next?
Yeah, totally.
Because that conversation of what's next is, a lot of people don't have that. They're just like, this is my goal. This is what I'm going to go. And you, it's that self-actualization that, no, actually, like, there's more to the world. Like you just said, that there's more to me.
I was always told by my mum and dad that, you know, being a mum doesn't mean that you give up on your dreams. Being a woman and being at home doesn't mean that you're any less of a person. Being, you know, not being everything that you can be doesn't mean that that makes you any less.
Yeah.
You know, my dad was always like, so what? You can't do that. There's plenty of other things you can do. Get your ass up, stop sulking. You know? You know?
Start hustling.
He's like, here's a concrete pill. Harden up. That was his favorite. Harden up. You know? And so it was like, okay, all right, what's next? What else can I do? Okay, well, I can't. He's like, crying's never going to get you anywhere. Feeling sorry for yourself isn't going to get you anywhere.
What else can you do?
You're the only person that has that control and that guidance over your life. Where are you going to go next? What are you going to do with yourself next? You know, only you can get yourself out of that hole. So how do you put yourself in there, get yourself out. And so that mentality of, you know, all right, I'm more than just a singer. I'm not going to be a singer anymore. So what else am I going to be?
Yeah.
Okay. What else can I do? You know? And so I would constantly, and I think that's where that whole growth mindset of just always wanting to develop yourself even more, even wanting to just grow and just to fill yourself with as much information. I think I just started getting even more hungrier for things to do, places to go, people to see. Let me connect. Let me do this, let me do that. Sports has always been a grounding foundation for me. So going back to sports has always, it just fills my heart. Like, I'm just like, I love that. I may not be able to run around on a netball court like I used to.
Yeah. But hey, you run your mouth and you tell people where to go.
Yeah. You know, you get on the touch field or anything like that like I used to. But I love it. I love the excitement, the drive, the motivation, the determination. And so I've had those good foundations growing up, and I've had really good family around me to make sure that those were always instilled in me. And so that's always been a driving force to what's next as I grow up and as I get older. You know, I mean, my driver's license says that I'm older, but in my head and in my mind and in my heart, I'm still young at heart. Mm. And I'm just like, what else can I learn? Yeah. What else can I fill my kitty with? What other wisdom can I add to my value myself?
One thing that, you know, when I interviewed you and when we started, you know, becoming friends and going cool, you know, because at the time.
You mean when you stalked me?
Hey, that's for the other podcast. And I told you, I just made that up for the jokes, man.
When you started like pulling out all my like primary school photos and everything.
Shit, man. It was just for jokes. But no, one thing that I actually haven't mentioned it to you as well is the blended family. Like my older girl, you know, she's my stepdaughter. You know, that's my heart. I've been her dad since she was five. Even though she would never call me dad, but she knows, right?
Yeah.
And that's the same, right? Like, what's the hardest thing having a blended family with, you know, and coming together that you found?
Oh, wow. It was really scary for me at first, yeah, because I had come back from America, obviously, from a real tumultuous relationship. It wasn't the best. It wasn't the safest. And it took me quite a few years to trust and allow myself to be around other people.
Mm. And those are two older ones?
Yeah, and yep. I had two, like my daughter and my son. When I'm... I would never bring men around my children.
Mm.
Like I would never ever do that around. I was so protective of them, and like you've got to be someone super special to be around my kids, you know. And that was my thought. Like, what do I need a man? I've got a great dad who's an awesome koro. I've got some awesome brother-in-laws and uncles that are around that are huge influences in their life.
And you trust.
Yeah, and that I've grown up with them. Yeah. I know them inside out and everything. So, you know, they don't need another man in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing was, like, I think I was still healing as well from all of that. And then going into a relationship where I really started to actually have feelings for this person and really trust them. And I'm like, you know, that whole fear of, am I exposing myself and my kids to the right people?
Mm.
And so I was super protective of that. Finally, you know, met this amazing man and stuff. And he was everything that I obviously needed, but I didn't know that I needed.
Okay, wow.
Because I didn't know what I wanted in a relationship. I didn't know, you know, where I wanted it to go. I just knew what I didn't want in my life. And that was, you know, obviously abusive manipulation and domestic violence and someone who I couldn't trust or someone who wasn't stable, someone who had no drive or was doing drugs or things like that. Like, I didn't want that kind of stuff in my life.
At the time, though, when that's all going on, was that hard to identify? You know, that's the person that you're with has no drive and it's, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, I think as the years go on, you
kind of figure it out.
You figure it out and everything. But right off the bat, like, I don't think everyone really knows anyone, you know. So it took a while. But I think the other fear was, here I am with two children. And I think I did kind of see myself as quite broken at that point, because I had come from such a tumultuous relationship, and I don't think I quite healed 100% from that.
Yeah,
I just threw myself into work and kids,
and that was never a plaster almost. You just kind of patched things together.
Yeah, yeah.
Kept you busy so you don't have to think about things.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And I think that whole Kiwi mentality is, oh, you just get on with it.
Yeah,
you know, just get on with it.
How did you heal?
Well, going into the relationship with my partner now, a lot of that healing was knowing that I could trust him.
Okay.
Knowing that I could rely on him and that he was going to be that man that was going to be there for me. But at the same time, I was like, I'm coming into this with two kids and baggage. Mm. Like, I was pretty straight up.
Like I was like,
this you always are. You're probably the most the most straight up person I know. But well, yeah, well, continue.
I was pretty honest with him, and you're like, this is what's happened. This is this, and he's like, well, you know, I'm not that person. I'm like, yeah. Everyone says that, you know. And he's like, no, I'm really not that person. I'm like, yeah, whatever. We'll see, you know, kind of thing. And as my walls started coming down and everything, and I started to actually value what a real relationship looked like, and I was like, oh wow, like. You're not keeping tabs on me. You're not asking me who I'm talking to. You're not asking me where I'm going.
You're checking
not,
my phone.
Yeah, you know, why you dress like that? Why your hair's like that? Why are you wearing that perfume? Why are you wearing that makeup? Like, and I was like, oh. I was like, this is actually really cool. Like, I can feel like myself and not be manipulated or told into how I should do and look and this and that. And I was like, this is what a healthy relationship looks like. So once I saw what a healthy relationship looked like, then going, oh, so I've got kids and you know, like he never pressured me to meet the kids straight away. He never, you know, tried to say, oh, you know, you're spending too much time with your kids and all that kind of crap or anything like that. He never, ever did anything like that. And he was just like, you know, when you're ready, when you and the kids are ready. And I was just like, oh, wow. Like this is actually a genuinely amazing person. And then I was like, okay. I was like, so, like, how is your mum and dad going to feel? Because I was like, okay, you're obviously this amazing person. You're their golden child. How is your parents going to feel knowing that you're coming into this relationship with someone who's already had kids?
Mm.
You know, I think society's, you know, views, yep. It was kind of like, ooh, taboo, you know, how are you going to pick up someone who's got kids? And I think for my own mental place at that time, I was always told, who's going to want you with kids?
Yeah.
No one's going to want you. You've already got kids. No one's going to want to be with you, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I had that in my back of my head and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, like, but then I realized that, you know, he wasn't bothered by it.
Yeah.
He was fine with it. And so I never put any pressures on him to actually be their dad or be that person. And I think what made it easier was that at that time, the sperm donor just wasn't present. He was a ghost.
To this day as well?
Well, yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Pretty much.
But does that make things easier?
It did. It did, yeah. Because it meant that
Fresh, clean slate.
Yeah, it was a clean slate. And I only had to worry about the kids. I didn't have to worry about, oh, how are they feeling, because he's coming in and out of their life and he's inconsistent and things like that. I mean, there were, like, I would ring.
You'd make that effort?
And I would be like, hey, you know, you're their dad. You should be in their life. Just because I don't want you in my life doesn't mean you can't be in their life. And then it got to the not answering, the I'm busy, and then just not picking up at all. Like, I got $2,000 of Vodafone bills, oh, wow. You know, of phone calls that I had made over a space of a year. And it was my dad who said, you know what? He's like, and I'm over here crying in tears, just like, you know, why doesn't he want to be a part of their life? Like, why isn't he making an effort? Like, why isn't he doing this? And then you think, my dad turns around and he goes, well, if he wasn't that person for you when you were there, what makes you think he's going to be that person now? And wow. I was like, the light bulb.
That was an amazing line. Like, that right there is some gold. You know what I mean? Because it's true. Like, it's, you kind of have to, that man, that brought clarity to, I don't even have a situation like that. But I'm like, no, that makes total sense.
Nah. And so, yeah, if he's not there, if he wasn't there for you then, what makes you think he's going to be there for you now? And wow. I was just like, he goes, do you need them? And I was like, well, no. And he goes, are the kids missing out on anything? And I was like, well, no. And I was like, he goes, so why are you wasting tears over it? Why are you putting out all this energy? He goes, I see you all the time doing this all the time. This for dad, take photos for dad, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And he's not present. He's not he's not reciprocating anything.
It's a one-way street.
Yeah. And I was like, you know what? And he goes, why make him be a part of their life when he doesn't want to be?
Mm. You can't control that.
And so that was the light bulb and the green light for me to go, okay, I'm just going to focus on me and the kids and just do us. And then when I met my partner now and having to go, okay, now what does that look like? Because I had done me and the kids for so long, for so many years by ourselves, and it was just
me and the kids against the world.
Yeah.
I've now got this person who I'm just like, oh, like, do you realize the dynamics that you're jumping into? Like, you don't need, I don't need you. We want you to be a part of our life.
You've had an opportunity.
And like, now I've got this person who wants to be a part of their life.
Mm.
And I'm just like, oh, this is new. This is a new feeling. So then having to have that whole, okay, do you realize that they're going to call you dad? Because it was my daughter. She turned around and she, we were going somewhere and I was getting some stuff ready in one room and she walked into the other room and she was like, you know, approached him and she goes, hey, can I ask you something? And he was like, sure, bub, what's up? She's like, can I call you dad? Because I really want you to be my dad. I really love you and I want you to be my dad. She was 5 years old.
Oh, wow.
Years old. And I was just like, oh, I didn't tell her to say that.
Yeah, where did that come from?
I was like, oh, my God, oh, my God. I was freaking out. Yeah. But she was super for real and he was super calm. I was the one that was freaking out.
Oh.
And I'm just like, oh, my gosh, this makes it so much more serious now.
Yeah. My girl, who I've, you know, since five, she's never called me dad. Okay, it's Tim and it's thing. But I overheard her one time and she got a job at the Kmart and I went in there and you know, I had a bit of swag, I had a bit of clout at the time.
Get and, 20% discount.
Yeah, you know. Hey, I had the bakery run. Yeah, you know, and I walked in and one of her friends goes, is that your dad? And she said, yeah, that's my dad. And she didn't admit it. She didn't say it to me, but I heard her say it, and I went to the car and have a good old tangi wet away. Aww. I was like, oh, man. But yeah,
though. And being able to understand what a healthy relationship was and having my partner show me that and then realize, okay, this is actually okay. This is safe. This is we're choosing to be together. We're choosing to be in this relationship and make this dynamic work for us, you know. And every blended family is different, obviously co-parenting and all that kind of crap. But now that we've got other kids, you know, that have come into our family, it's just so beautiful. Like, he doesn't ever say they're his stepkids or anything. Those are his kids.
Yeah.
And he's been their dad longer than the sperm donor has, you know, been in their life. And, you know, I've always been honest with my kids. I've had to be honest with them because, you know, life happens and stuff happens and things come out and kids grow and they go through development stages. And we've had to go to therapy. We've had to talk about it. I didn't want to tell them about it because I didn't want to enforce my happenings on them.
Yes.
I wanted them to form their own views. Whenever they wanted to reach out and talk to their dad, they could. We've just got to a point where they're just like, what does he do for us? And, you know, he doesn't do anything for us. So, you know, this is my dad.
Mm.
He's that guy in America. This is my dad.
Mm.
And this is our family. We are happy here.
Beautiful.
Anything. But I've always said to them, like, you can reach out at any time. You can, if you want to talk to him, you most welcome to. I know where he is. I've never blocked him on social media and stuff like that. He'll probably see this and be like, wah! You know, but hey.
Hey, that's what it is.
It is what it is. You know, but the kids have always, I've always given them that choice. And they have both said to me, and they both said to, you know, their dad, I mean, yeah, they're dead.
I get you.
Me and my partner.
Yeah.
That, you know, when they're ready,
yeah,
they'll do it.
Hmm.
And I'm like, okay, it's not when anybody else is ready. It's not when I'm ready or sperm donor's ready or anybody else. It's when they're ready. And they have to be clear in what they want to do and stuff like that. So, I mean, for any parents who are trying to co-parent out there, for any dads or mums who are really in and out of their children's lives, you know, they're not stupid.
You know.
And I would think that I was protecting them all the time and stuff like that by, you know, not telling them the full stories and stuff like that. But, you know, it was such a relief to be able to be super honest and then have clarity and then for the kids to be able to make their own decisions. And they embrace their culture with like their culture that they have birthright, and then their culture that they have, you know, whanau right. You know, and they embrace both sides of our culture, both the Samoan and Māori and Pākehā. And, you know, they're like, yeah, I'm Samoan. My dad's Samoan. Yeah. You know, they love it. They absolutely love it and they embrace it. And if it wasn't for being shown what a healthy relationship was and that what we choose to make work for us,
yeah,
not what you see on television, not what you read on books, on TikToks and things like that, it's what we choose for us as a couple, as a family. Like, I think, yeah, I mean, we make it work and it works for us.
Yeah.
Our whānau works for us. And I mean, I've never actually. I think when we first got together, I said we were a blended family.
Yeah, but you know what? Yeah,
but like, I don't think I've actually considered us to be a blended family.
Choice. That's so cool.
And he actually helped me heal. And it wasn't until I did the fight when I was boxing, and Monty was my coach, and we did the Joseph Parker undercard. And it wasn't until I did that that I actually realized that was my healing. Like getting in a ring and sparring with males and having them punch me in the face and have that feeling go through all over again. Like that was a huge healing part.
Wow.
And I remember like the bell went and I was like, I've got to go to the toilet. And I had all the headgear on and the gloves on and stuff like that. Yeah. And I jumped out of the ring. I ran to the bathroom and I just cried.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
Like, and that's when I realized I hadn't actually healed. And then I got back in the ring and I kept going. And I was like, this is good for me. This is really good. This is a really good release. And just keep going and just keep pushing and push through all that pain. And I got home and we had just moved in with each other and I got home from that training. And I remember he was like, hey, how'd it go? And I was like, yep. And his eyes puffy, went straight to the bathroom and I just cried and cried and cried. And he got in the shower with me with all his clothes on and just held me.
See?
And that taught me what a healthy relationship was. And then he was this beautiful person that wasn't there to hurt me or to take advantage of me and my kids.
And you know what? You know what the craziest, I'm not even going to say the craziest thing, but the coolest thing about it too is that your kids get to see that too. And then they know what a healthy relationship is.
Yeah.
They know what love looks like.
Yeah.
They know what you know, healthy love is. And they're able to, you can only be what you can see.
Yeah.
And if you can't see that, if you only see, you know, negativity, that's all you can be. And for them to be able to, you know, see that day in, day out is a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Well, that's why we're having number six and that's why he has to marry me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's no returns on that one. There's no exchanges.
Yeah. This is not JJ's in Westfield. Okay.
Yeah. That's why we're getting married at the end of this year. But no, and it's, I think that, you know, once we realized that I was like, yeah, this is a safe place. This is awesome. This is our family. This is
what struck the jackpot.
Yeah, I did. I still feel like that.
Yeah.
I'm so lucky. I'm so grateful. Like my family, my, I have such a good life and I'm reminded of that. Like, I have friends and that come from America and stuff, and I've had a girlfriend come and visit me from Compton. She was there through a lot of the bullshit and she was just like, man, sis, your life here is just so beautiful. Like, this is what I want. This is what she was like, now I understand why, you know, you're just so freaking nice all the time. Like, people are just so lovely here in New Zealand. You know, people are just so beautiful. Like, the environment's beautiful. She's like, no one's picking on each other or, like, you know, battling it out with each other. No one's trying to do the, you know, black and browns over here and this and that. Like, half the stuff that they go through over there, we know nothing about.
Yeah.
And it's minuscule to what we experience here. But at the same time, what hurts us here, like, that's still huge. And yeah. I'm not devaluing anything that happens here in New Zealand, but I said to her, you know, life doesn't have to be that hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way that we lived life in America in comparison to living life here, like, I'm so glad that I brought my kids back here to live life here. It's hard over in America. And for anyone who's grown up there in the streets and Compton and Watts and East LA and all those places around America, just in general, like, it's hard trying to navigate your way through that. And it's hard if you have to grow up in that atmosphere and that environment.
That's all you know.
Yeah, and you know? That's all you know. So you don't know how to be or have a healthy relationship with anybody, let alone your own family.
Hmm.
You know, and I see some of the places here in New Zealand. I see a lot of the dynamics now turning to that.
Yeah.
I see a lot of those things happening. And it's sad.
Hmm.
But we still have a lot more common sense here in New Zealand to change those things before it gets that far, before we allow our children to be growing up in an environment like that where that's the normal.
Yeah.
Like, that's not normal. It's not normal to steal from your grandparents and sell your mum down the road, you know. It's not normal to throw people under the bus and just film them.
Yeah, it's getting like that now, eh?
You know?
But okay, I just want to thank you firstly, and I always thank you for just being a shining light for a lot of people. There's going to be a lot of people that watch this and listen to this that will go, you know, I've been through that and I understand what that's like. And that's what it's all about. Like, we can, you know, like, in terms of the podcast, in terms of just online social media and all that stuff, we can talk about numbers all we want. But you said this very early on in the podcast today, that it's not about all that shit. It's not about the money. It's how you impact people.
Mm.
And I feel as if knowing you has impacted me, but also the people that listened to you for years and years, and not just on the radio, but just and being in your aura for a long time, have been able to really kind of grow, and your impact has been unprecedented. So I'm just very thankful that you can, that you could come through, and I'm just thankful that you're so vulnerable and opened up. And I mean, you know, like, so thankful for you.
Oh, when you get started to talk about my family and my partner, like, I'm really, really lucky. And if I can say anything, it would be that, you know, none of those events in my life, none of those things that were good or bad, define who I am.
Mm.
You know, and so there's always room for improvement. There's always room for growth, and there's always room to change your intentions and what you want to achieve in life. No matter how old or how broke or how down in the dumps that you are, you know. And so I think that if you can just keep believing in that, then you can always get to the next day.
Too much, eh?
You know? So, and I'm super grateful that you allow me to have a platform.
That's the coolest thing about this platform thing, right? I don't have to, you know, I'm just like, I know people that have amazing, not just pūraku, but just be the whole Wairua is. And that's why I hounded you. So I was like, hey, I know. So you remember the last one when I had the old photos?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it's not a pyrang, because I can't be eating too many pies now.
Oh, hey. We'll get there one day.
I've got a few more months before this baby comes out, and then I've got to shred for a wedding. So I've really got to cut back on the amount of pies and burgers I've been eating.
Thank you so much. I'm going to bring you back on the Wednesday podcast that's coming up, and we'll talk about that. But thank you, eh? Cheer.
Frank Podcast.
Hello, we're Ellie, Chris, and Guy from the Extremely Casual Gamers podcast. We're a casual gaming podcast for the everyday gamer.
We chat everything gaming, from PlayStation to Xbox to Nintendo to PC, but not like full-on stuff, like super chill stuff, casual stuff, like, oh, if you had to date a video game character, who would you date?
Even if you're just gaming on your mobile, we want to hang out with you, and we've got awesome giveaways for you to win.
Join us every Thursday for a brand new episode. Just search Extremely Casual Gamers wherever you get your podcasts.